D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 386, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Rob Berger from SoHoTechColumbus.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, thanks for letting me be here.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show and excited to hear about what you're doing in your business. And one of the reasons I contacted you was you had sent an email for the show letting me know about a service that you use, and we'll kind of get into that and some of the other things you do in your business. All right. Let's do this. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're located, and basically how you got started in computer repair?
Sure. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and I was working IT in the late 1990s doing user support, IIS web support management, NT4 administration back in the old days. And as I became more and more technically proficient, I noticed I was having a lot more friends and family and acquaintances and people inviting me over for dinner. And as long as I was there, hey, can you come take a look at my computer? Those kinds of things. So I realized that, you know, there was more to my skills. Also, I had just entered the MBA program at Ohio State and was progressing through that with an IT concentration. And when I finished up that program, I realized I really had a good business niche because residential people don't have IT staff on site. And so there was definitely a need there. So I started the business shortly thereafter and have been doing it for, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years since then. So primarily the business is residential with a handful of small businesses as well.
Okay, great. No, that sounds, wow, that's a nice resume to have and be able to go from that. And residential does tend to be a little bit different for people too. So, and you're right, they don't have the tech support that a big company has. So that's awesome. It's a good way to look at it.
Right.
So when you got started in your computer repair shop, I mean, obviously we talked a little bit before the show and in the email, you're doing this part-time, correct?
Yes, I have a full-time job that I do during the day in the IT world, and I'm mobile when I work with these customers, so I schedule those for nights and weekends, so it works out great. They don't have to take off time from their job. I don't have to take off time from my job, and it works out best for everybody.
No, that sounds real good. Yeah, it's always nice to make it convenient for the residential customers so that they have that support when they're not working and you're not working, you're able to support them in the evening when a lot of other computer shops actually close.
Right.
It's kind of a win-win situation. So that's good. And so what types of computer jobs and things have you been working on lately?
Mostly lately, it's a lot of break fix. It's a lot of spyware, malware cleanup. But there always ends up being other things. As long as I'm there working on people's systems, I encourage them to ask me questions. I encourage them to, you know, bring up other issues, because if I'm waiting for a reboot or installing updates or doing a scan or whatnot, you know, oh, hey, my wife just got a new iPhone. Let's add that to the network. Or I'd like to have, you know, this printer available for everybody. Can we do that? So all of my service calls, for the most part, end up being many different items. It's not, just one thing of a virus cleanup or a new system install. There usually ends up being several items that we take care of.
Gotcha. Oh, that's great. So you do most of your work outside of the home.
Yes.
You don't have anybody come to the house or anything like that? You're all
that's
mobile?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. Well, that's cool. No, that's I know a lot of technicians are doing that. They do the mobile support, and, you know, a lot of people like that. You know, I'm lazy, so I do a lot out of my house because I really don't want to travel out, but that's just me. But I like it that way better. I can, you know, do several machines at once and I'm available for other things. So, and my hours are a little bit different. So there's no way that I'm available when my customers are available necessarily. So that kind of works for me. But, all right. So out of your break fix stuff, what types of things, you say malware removal and stuff like that. Is it the normal stuff that you're kind of seeing, or is there anything new that's coming out that has been bothering people lately?
I think it's the usual stuff. It's, people aren't sure what to click when they're trying to download something, and they end up with, you know, half a dozen different searches, and their homepage is redirected somewhere, and they get conduit and all sorts of other things that, you know, if you're into that, then great. But the people that I'm working with are not interested in those products.
Gotcha. Now, are you using anything like, are you putting like things like Onchecky on computer systems that you work on?
You know, I've been playing with that on my own system, but I haven't been deploying it to other people as well. I've made a few recommendations to people to take a look at that. But mostly it's, Malwarebytes, it's ADW Cleaner, it's CCleaner. It's the usual kinds of tools that we have in our toolbox to clean up those things.
Gotcha.
And also my customers, the demographic tends to be an older crowd. So I would say 50 plus. And they're much more comfortable having me do things, which is great. If there's a Microsoft KB that I need to look up and do some registry edits to correct some things, or MS config and go into the registry and change some startup items, those are things that I and probably the rest of the audience here are comfortable with. We've been doing it for years. Right. As soon as you get into the registry, other people just kind of panic and they realize they're in over their heads. So they pay us for our expertise and our comfort with those kinds of things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I started playing around with Onchecky myself and have been using it on my system. And then I also deploy it with my managed services. So mm-hmm. It's one of the things that automatically goes on there. And even if people are not doing my managed services, I'm just throwing it on there anyways. Just for the mere fact of if I can, I've come to a conclusion that even after I clean up a system, or even when somebody brings a brand new computer home, that they're going to start to slowly get malware and different toolbars and things like that fairly quickly. And I figure with a program that's free, like Onchecky, if I put that on there, those people are, I'm going to slow the process down, hopefully. And that's my hope. I really don't want people to bring their computers to me, every 3 or 4 months. I'd like them to have a good working system. What I'm finding out is even after cleaning machines, people are still having 2, 3, 4 months and they're already going, yeah, this one's kind of gummed up. It's slow and it's not, the wireless isn't working or whatever. And so they're starting to bring these things back, even though I've done a thorough cleaning on it, whether it's a brand new reinstall, which I hate to do, or if it's if it's an actual cleaning. And I'm fairly good at cleaning machines and making them good. But I think what happens with a lot of people is they take these machines and they suffer with them for 4, 5, 6 months before it gets point where, oh, wait a minute, Internet Explorer stopped working. I can't get on the internet. I downloaded Google Chrome and now that stopped working. I downloaded Firefox and that stopped working. So it's not till they get to that point where it's so bad that they come to us and say, hey, I need you to fix this. And it's so gunked up. You're just like, wow, you could have brought this to me like a long time ago.
Right. Yeah. So sometimes when people, I go visit their machine and I ask them when they started having these problems and they say like 3 months ago, I think, well, there's no way you're going to have enough system restore points to have the easy solution of just rolling back to then. So
that's a good point.
Let's start the cleanup.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I hear a lot of people talk about system restore and I always forget to use it. I know it's a great tool to be able to do certain things, and it's just one of those things where I just forget. I just forget for whatever reason. I was using a couple programs, because what I'm getting a lot in my shop right now, not a lot, but a good amount to where it's annoying, is the FBI virus, ICE virus, all those kinds of ones that won't let you in, can't go into safe mode anymore to bypass them. I usually use Hitman Pro. The problem is you can only use Hitman Pro once without buying a license. It gives you a 30-day trial. If you try to use it again on that system without it being wiped, then Hitman Pro won't work. It'll show you what file is affected, but it won't actually get rid of the file so you can boot into the system, which is kind of bad. The other thing I've been using for that is the Kaspersky Rescue Disk, and that's been working out, pretty good. The only problem with that is it takes so long. It runs forever, and you're like, Seriously? So I'm still trying to find a program that will let me get in and get rid of that, you know, fairly quickly so that I can move on with the rest of the cleaning process. Have you found anything out there like that that can get past
you
that?
You know, I think I've been fortunate and my customers have been fortunate. I think I've had one customer who's had that problem and it was, a year ago at least. So they're downloading other bad things instead of that. They've been fortunate to be able to avoid that, knock wood.
That's great, because I actually had a customer who, within a six-week period after I cleaned his machine up the first time, he got it again. And at this time, I did a little research to find where it was coming from, and it was a Adobe Flash EXE installer.
Hmm.
You know, there was a couple of them that were actually infected on his system that he had downloaded from wherever, you know, because you look for Adobe Flash because it says you need to upgrade, and you click on the first thing that comes up on a Google search, which is not from Adobe.
Sure, it's all the ads.
So it took him to something else. He downloaded this EXE file and became infected. So it's just it's crazy to keep up with that stuff out there. What types of hardware and stuff do you work on?
Luckily, it's mostly, a little bit of XP, but okay. Mostly Vista and newer. And in terms of hardware, it's mostly on the Windows side, but there's still, you know, a little bit of Mac here and there. But mostly it's, desktops and laptops and configuring for printers, joining printers to the network and things like that.
Very cool. So now when you say now you work on laptops, what types of things do you do on laptops?
I think it's a lot of the things that can extend the life of the laptop. It's people need to upgrade to an SSD, add some RAM. I've had a few people who've cracked the screens or had problems with the screens. Actually, I picked up a machine this afternoon from a woman who was saying that her Gateway laptop, you know, the screen stopped working, and it's been a few weeks. She got my name from her sister, so that was a great customer referral there.
Yeah.
And I boot up the machine in the kitchen, and I'm pounding on the F8 button to just try to get into safe mode to see if I can get anything, because then I'll know whether I need to order a new screen or not. And it shows up in safe mode, and she lets out an expletive of she couldn't believe that it started up. And I reassured her. I said, this is safe mode only. This is not real Windows. You know, I still need to do some work on it. I just want to see what I was looking at here while we were here together. So I still need to do some cleanup on the machine, but I brought it back and I'll work on it and get it back to her in a couple of days.
Gotcha. So you think that's something like a video driver or something like that, or something got corrupted there? Okay.
Absolutely.
Very good. Yeah, that's always good. Yeah, I always laugh at sometimes the things that I get. I've had, Best Buy. I've had people bring me stuff from Best Buy and they told me the motherboard's bad. I want you to take a look at it. And, you know, I boot it up and the first thing it comes to is the black and white screen that says no device ready or whatever. Whatever type of message it has in there. Well, I'm like going, okay, well, the screen works, you know. So, and the BIOS is booting, from the motherboard. So that works. So it's not that. But it's amazing how sometimes technicians will go, oh, yeah, the motherboard's bad. Either that or you just didn't really want to work on it. I don't know, but
sure. Or if you see that, no boot device found, it's like, right. All right, well, we can pull the hard drive and see if there's any data left, but we're going to have to do a full reinstall.
Yeah.
Or possibly buy a new hard drive.
Yeah. Those are always fun. I get a lot of those. I get a lot of failed hard drives. And what I tell people is usually within the first couple years, if you can get past the first 2 years, you're usually okay. Because they usually, from what I've seen, is they usually fail within the first couple of years. I mean, I've got IDE hard drives, sitting down in my basement right now that still work, and they're probably 15 years old, So it's like, they still work no problem. And they'll probably last forever.
Well, SSDs are getting cheaper and cheaper. It's hard to not recommend that to people when they're sitting there with a 5400 RPM laptop drive or even a 7200, desktop drive. Go SSD. Unless you have a massive amount of data, then you're going to get a tremendous amount of improvements.
You know, that's a great tip, because I'll be honest with you, I had not thought of that myself, because what I've been doing on laptop hard drive replacements. I've been going a little bit better than their 5400. I said, hey, we're going to put a 7200 Western Digital Black in here, and this is going to get you a little bit better speed. It's a more quality hard drive. It's got a 3-year warranty on it. You're going to pay a little bit more money, but there's no point in doing the, 5400, that you had in there before. But you're right. When you're down in the 128, 256 level of a SSD, there's not really a whole huge price difference. And most
you're looking at 100, 130 bucks.
Right.
There's some great deal. I wrote a few articles recently on my blog, and trying to get people to know when there's some good deals out there. If these are residential customers who have a minor amount of photos, minor amount of music, no videos, they're mostly, office and browsing and some other minor applications, go SSD. That's where they see the performance, or that's where they see the slowness in the machine. That you can get from a RAM boost, or an SSD upgrade. If they're willing to spend, 100, 150 bucks, possibly on the hardware, they can get a much better performance and enjoy the system for a few more years.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, and most of the SSDs that I've purchased lately come with the cloning software. I had a Samsung 840, and I don't remember what the other one was before that. It was a few months ago. But it comes with the cloning software. So even if you don't have a Cronus on your system to do the cloning, it comes with the software. So it makes it very easy. You can connect your adapter to the drive and copy their whole system over to the new drive, swap them, up and ready to go, probably less than an hour.
That's a great tip there. Yeah, I guess one of the things that kind of concerns me about the SSDs is basically being able to recover things. And it's probably unfounded on my part because, if a hard drive comes in, I would say most of the time, not most of the time, I'd say 50-50. Either it's just totally dead, you can't get anything back, or you can get most of the stuff back. And I'm just not sure with the SSD if it's going to be to a point where I can't get anything back once the hard drive just says I'm done. But the people I'm talking to keep telling me that these hard drives are just lasting longer than even what the manufacturers are putting on their boxes.
I haven't had any experiences of people bringing me failed SSDs. I think we can run through the usual diagnostics and the things that we do in case of trying to recover data. But I think also that might be a good pain point or painful conversation where you ask the customer, what are you doing for backups? And that's when you can go into your whole, discussion of, are you the kind of person who wants to, be in control and manage it yourself and have the external hard drive on the desk? Or are you the kind of person who wants someone else to take care of it? And in that case, go with a cloud solution like Carbonite or something like that. And I find that that's a great, it's difficult. It's difficult to ask, somebody if they're interested in, buying insurance the day after their house burned down. But, it's that kind of an instance of, that you have that person's attention, and you can, and the way that I frame it is exactly that way of, it doesn't matter to me. It's what works best for you. And that if you want to manage the process and have that hard drive sitting on your desk, and run the Windows backup or run some other backup, then it's there for you. Or if you want to use a cloud solution, or if you even want to kind of cheat a little bit with something like Dropbox or CrashPlan, where it's synchronizing the files and not necessarily doing a true backup, then you can do that. You're going to pay more for it,
right?
Because you're on a subscription basis, but it's right there for you. And if you don't want to worry about it, then it'll be taken care of.
That's a good point. Yeah, it is a painful conversation to have with people. I try to tell people, hey, what are you using for backup? And in on most of the machines I'm getting in my shop, it's amazing, especially with laptops. What ends up happening is they're using Windows backup and they're backing their data up to a partition on their drive. So I have to explain to them, this is not really a backup, guys. You're on the same hard drive. I said, if something happens to this hard drive, your data is gone regardless. Mm-hmm. And I said, you're in really all you're doing is using that to move your files over. You could do that manually, you know. And what ends up happening is a lot of these people have this second partition, and then it's so full because Windows Backup doesn't do a very good job of managing it. It just keeps adding to, unless you set it up properly. But even the ones that have been set up properly in the beginning, it seems like somehow, some way, and of course, the customer never touched it, but they basically have, the settings have changed.
Sure. Well, I came across somebody just a couple of weeks ago, and they had their Windows Backup. Well, let me go back in reverse order. I noticed when we boot up the machine, the little bubble showed up saying that you have files waiting to be written to disk.
Yeah.
So I asked them, what were they in the middle of burning something? And they had no idea what I was talking about. So I ended up backtracking and I'm seeing that they've set up Windows Backup to go to their optical drive, which they've never done.
Right.
So it keeps trying to send the files there for them to burn. And, who knows how large those files are. It's never going to fit onto a disk.
Right.
And, they're, backing up to the air. They're backing up to nowhere. So it's not even a separate partition on the machine. It's just waiting to be burned,
and it's never been done. And there's
absolutely.
And not only that, when you have those things going on, that's pulling resources from what you're trying to do. And it's like, and it's annoying. And it's like all the other things that they don't click down there anyways, like Windows Updates, Adobe Flash Player, Adobe Reader.
One more thing to ignore down in the system tray.
Exactly.
Sure.
I'm like, I don't even know why they put those notifications. I've often thought about just turning those things off. Oh, my. Wow. So now so in your business, do you do any types of do you replace motherboards and laptops, power jack repairs, any of that type of stuff?
No, once you get into those kind of hardware items, that's not something that I feel comfortable with.
Gotcha. Okay.
I try to stay away from that. When you're getting into those kind of repairs on laptops, I think very quickly, based on the age of the machine and the amount of time and materials and labor, it's going to end up being that a person is going to want to buy a new machine.
Yeah, it's funny. It's probably about. It's probably about 70-30, 30% of the time. Now, it's more like 50-50, I would say. 50% of the time they want the machine fixed. 50% of the time they want to go out and get a new machine. And I'm always amazed when somebody's going to spend $300 on a 4-year-old machine to replace the motherboard and the laptop. And they're like, no, I just really like that machine. I want that. And I'm like, okay. Because I try to talk them into, hey, let's go get another laptop. Let's move your stuff over, and we'll get you going on down the road with what you need. So,
yeah, the users, my customers are much less devoted to their hardware. They're much more looking for, can I get on my AOL? Can I get on my browser and whatnot? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I tell them, luckily I haven't had systems, damaged or failures to that point. But, once it starts to be, I can see it's going to be $250, maybe $300. I start having that conversation with them of, your machine is 6 years old. You're still running Vista.
Yeah.
Anything you buy is going to be better hardware wise.
Absolutely.
You're better off, getting something newer.
No, that's good.
And that's great because I build up a relationship with them. They trust me. We have conversations and I explain the answers to their questions in terms that they can understand. And it's not a talking down to, it's not condescending. It's talking technical, and internet acronyms and system acronyms and whatnot in a way that, they can understand. And it's, if I'm going to call a plumber or if I'm going to call an electrician or am I going to talk to an architect, I need them to talk to me in a way that I can understand.
Absolutely.
Because that's not my area of specialty. So I try to give them analogies and talk to my users in a way that they can understand what's going on. And actually it helps because it brings their awareness and their concern about, you know, systems and knowing some of the different, you know, technologies and whatnot, so that they can be aware of it.
Absolutely. No, that's a good point. And that's a very unique gift, I think, in this industry, is to be able to do both, to be able to talk to a customer and, you know, basically, like you said, give them analogies that they can understand. And then also to be able to, you know, work on the machines. And I think that makes for a great customer business or a great customer service that we can provide for our customers. And I often tell people that, listen, people are not really paying you to fix their machine. What they're paying for is the knowledge that you learned in order to learn how to fix their machine, because they don't, it's not that they couldn't do it if they didn't want to. They don't want to do it. They want somebody else to do it. And, you know, and so that's, I always think about that, and you just want to take care of them to the best of your ability. And so that they're happy and they're good, and they keep coming back. You know, that's, sure, that's the biggest thing.
Absolutely. And that was one of the points I wanted to bring up, you know, later on, but I'll go ahead and bring it up now, is treat your customers right. They are paying for your service and they are needing what you have. And I pride myself on a minimal amount of advertising, and my business is almost entirely word of mouth. And wow. if you look from, you know, the marketing documentation and whatnot, you know that the cost of acquiring a new customer is tremendously higher than retaining an existing customer. So my suggestion that I was going to give to the audience is keep track, whether you're using QuickBooks, which is what I'm using, and I know there are lots of other products out there, keep track of where your customers are coming from, so that you can tell the difference between a new customer and a repeat customer. I keep track of that stat, and over the last year, I'd say it's hovering right around 65% of my business is from repeat customers. And that's great. I don't have to spend more money advertising or reaching out trying to acquire new customers. I have built up a relationship with these people over years, and I give them a quality service. I tell them, give me a call, send me a text, send me an email, and if it's a quick question, that's free. That is customer service.
Yes.
I'm not gonna charge you for 5 minutes or 10 minutes of time where it's something I know off the top of my head, or even if I have to do a quick Google search and it takes me 10 minutes. I want to build that relationship with them and get their trust and deliver a quality product, so that when it's time for them to buy the new machine, or the kids are going off to college and they don't know what the kids need for school, or they know they need a wireless router or a modem or something, they're not sure what it's called, but they want to be able to be on the internet at the same time. You know, those are the kinds of things that I want them to have my business card, remember that I delivered a quality product to them, and call me back, because that works best for everybody. And if I can do that, then everybody wins. I just had a call from a customer a week ago, and I'm looking through my notes, and as I'm sitting there working on his machine, I see my business card taped up to the side of his desk. and I smile at that, because at that moment in QuickBooks, I see the last time I visited him was 6 years ago.
Wow.
It was 6 years ago, and he still had my information, and he still knew that I helped him with this machine, and he wanted to call me back when there are lots and lots of competitors out there. So I build that relationship with them, and I deliver that customer service. And I tell them, if this is something that I need to be on site for, or this is more complicated, we'll schedule a services call, and you know, I'll end up billing them for that. But if it's something quick and easy, that is free. That is customer service.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's the best way to look at it. I had a similar story with a customer when I lived on the east side over here in Michigan, and I'd built a business up for about it's probably about 2 years, 2.5 years, something like that. Anyways, one of my first customers. The very first customer when I went actually, you know, opened my LLC and all that kind of stuff, got all my stuff done. I did a job for them. They were very happy with it. They paid me extra money. And now I moved quite a while away. I moved like a couple years ago, so it's been a little over 4 years now, almost 5 years. And the number they had on my original business card had changed, so they actually went and looked online to find my new number and to call me. And when they did that, I was like going, yeah, you know, I couldn't service them anymore because they were so far away. But I was like, wow, I hadn't heard from you in 4 years. And all of a sudden now you're calling me back. And they had a lot of work that they needed done. I'm like, oh, so yeah, customer service. I think what you do when you're on premise, at your customer's house, or when you're dealing with the customers, I think that is key in this business. And the ones that are good at doing that, I think the ones that aren't, they're just in it for the quick buck or whatever. They won't. And, you know, so that's not to say that we shouldn't get paid for what we do, because, you know, here's the thing, as a technician, if you're not getting paid enough to do what you're doing, eventually you'll quit doing it.
Sure. Absolutely. They're paying for our expertise and they're paying for our knowledge and our skill. We're delivering that service.
Exactly.
So, you know, yep.
So, okay. So, we kind of covered some of the things that you've been working on, some of the stuff you're doing. Okay, so let's talk about what are some of your favorite tools, software or hardware-wise.
Sure. Well, this was what I emailed you about. I've been using a tool called TimeTrade, and it's an online calendar that I have hooked into my website, and it's great. I'm a solo practitioner. I'm always mobile, so all I have to worry about is scheduling me. I have, you know, my day job, full-time requirements. I have children and family requirements at sometimes, and I have a very irregular schedule. TimeTrade is great because I can post my calendar online, and I have it on my website, and I can direct customers to go there, and they can self-service, choose the date and time that meets their requirements, and make sure that it's a time that I'm available, and they can set up their own appointment. So instead of us going back and forth with email, oh, I'd like an appointment tomorrow. Oh, I'm busy tomorrow. How about Tuesday? No, we have family coming in Tuesday. How about Thursday? You know, you go back and forth and you lose a lot of time.
Sure.
It eliminates that situation. It also eliminates maybe they want to call me Friday at midnight and they don't feel comfortable calling me. And I hope they don't want to. Well, if they want to call me, that's fine. But it's a great way to eliminate all that confusion. I can post all of my available spots for scheduling appointments. And as long as I have open time, I've linked it to my Gmail account on the back end. So as long as I have something that's busy on my appointment, or on my calendar rather, then the appointment won't be available. So you can set up one-off and recurring appointment availability slots. And so the customer knows they're going on vacation or they have other commitments. They can pick and choose the date and the time that they want. And the only things that are available for me are what's available for them. So it works out great. The annual cost, I mean, I've had this for a few years. It's less than $100. You can brand it with your own logo. That's an extra like $20 or $30. But I think the value is tremendous. Every time I get an email that an appointment has been scheduled, and every time I see that automatically pop up on my calendar, I know that it saved me money. It's paid for itself so many times because either possibly I can't get to the phone to talk to them, or I'm driving in the car and I don't want to, you know, have a wreck and, you know, try to toggle back and forth with my calendar to see when I'm available. I just direct them to the website and I have it as in the signature of my email and I have it at the bottom of my monthly newsletter. If you're interested in scheduling an appointment, you know, use this easy self-serve tool and you can pick whatever works best for you. It seems like it's a great tool. I've been very happy with it. It integrates very well into my WordPress website. And, you know, it allows me to work smarter, not harder.
Right, right.
And, you know, I have the people enter in their name, their phone number, their address. And what's funny is frequently I'll have, you know, a notification that I have an appointment with somebody at their house and they don't put their home address. So I end up calling them and saying, where do you live? Where am I coming? You know, but it's great. I can block off time so I can account for travel around the city depending on where I'm going. And I can, you know, set up recurring appointments. I can do blocks of appointments on the weekends when I'm available. And there's a tremendous amount of administrative control on the back end. You can limit how many weeks out are published. You can eliminate the ability for people to schedule an appointment today so that you're not surprised that you need to go somewhere later on. You can say the soonest somebody can ever schedule is, you know, one day out. I've been very happy with it. And, you know, I wanted to share that with everybody. I think there are probably many, many scheduling tools out there that are available. I've seen some that requires the user to set up an account beforehand. And I don't want to do that. It allows the user to quickly select a time, select a date, enter in their information for where you're going, and then they submit it. They get an email confirmation back to their address so they can put that on their own, you know, Google Calendar or Outlook or whatever. And it works great.
No, I'm looking at it right now on your website. This is awesome. It's basically a calendar and it's got your availability slots. You know, obviously on the weekends when you're not working, you've got more available from the morning time, you know, all the way to the early evening. And then during the week when you're available, you've got your available slots, which is obviously after your regular day work schedule. This is great because I just changed my business earlier this year and moved some things around to do some things differently. But quite honestly, I wish I'd had this tool before because I had never heard of it. And this is definitely a gem.
I've seen some products like this and they're going to charge you $50-$100 a month.
Yeah.
This is the annual price. I mean, I've had it for several years. So I think, you know, I just renewed it. I think it was like $60 or $75 or something like that for the whole year.
That's great.
I would absolutely pay that because when you get those emails and you see that somebody has signed up and you did no work at all, you now have an appointment and, you know, that's great. That's definitely working smarter and not harder. And it allows you to work on the things you need to work on. And you're not necessarily always picking up the phone and whatnot. If people call me or they email me, absolutely, I will, you know, set up an appointment with them and work with them to find a time that meets both of our schedules. But it's so much easier just to have it published on the web, on your website, and direct them there or, you know, kind of train them through the various communication means that it is there. And then they can go there whenever they want.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, this is great. It seems like a great tool. And I think you're right. I think the price is right for this type of tool. And a lot of people do want to do things online anymore. They don't. The back and forth sometimes. And I get in an email sometimes where, you know, somebody goes, hey, how about this day? No, I can't do that. How about this? You know, and it's like you said, it's just this would avoid it. Hey, go to my website, look at my availability, pick one, put in your information, and I'll see you then. You know, that yeah. Simple. So
they could charge so much more, and I think it would still be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's very cool. Very cool. All right. So what other types of things? I'm looking on your website. It looks like you got remote management and monitoring and remote support.
Yeah, I just started with that within the past couple of months. I've seen a lot of good discussions about that on TechNibble, and there are some other podcasts that are sourced out of there from people there. And it's a great way well, you guys know all the benefits. It's a great way to provide service to the end users and, you know, do it from home in your pajamas. You don't have to drive. You don't have to, go into their house. And as long as their systems are online, you can, you know, connect and manage and do the things that you need to do. I find that with my customers, because my demographic is a little bit older, that they're not necessarily as interested in that. They're much more interested in the personal touch and the personal, right, you know, appearance on site, which is fine. Absolutely. I will definitely come to your house or your small business to work with you. But it's something that I've just started to dabble in. Something else that you'll see on the website that I really take into heart and I'm trying to provide valuable content is writing a blog and aggregating that and sending out a monthly newsletter. Myself, I subscribe to a tremendous number of blogs and I'm aggregating data from there. And whether it's security information or Windows XP expiration or hot deals on, you know, an SSD, or you're getting a new computer, what should you do with your old hard drive?
Right.
Please don't just throw it away. you know, all of your tax returns or whatever is on there. Don't throw it away. So by providing that content, yeah, I'm not trying to give away the farm. Obviously, I have services to provide to these customers, but I want to keep them informed. And also, I want to keep my name and my services on the front of their brain so that when they're thinking a week, a month, a year from now, hey, you know, Rob had an article about this. Let me go back and find that. Or I really appreciate his monthly newsletter. I'd learned something. I'm going to call him. So it's that way to stay in touch. And even if they never read it or they never respond, hopefully they're gaining some getting some of the value from it.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I love the picture of the kids out here destroying hard drives with hammers. That's awesome.
That was a very fun Father's Day to let the kids destroy the hard drive. Sometimes, you know, you want to use DBAN or something like that to do it electronically, but, you know, sometimes just taking out a hammer and letting the kids go to town on it can be fun as well.
That's good. That's good. That's very good. Yeah, I a lot of times I have when I'm replacing computers and stuff like that, people leave me with their old equipment sometimes. And, you know, what I do for them is I say, yeah, I'm going to take the hard drive and, you know, basically I'm going to write over it and, you know, wipe everything out permanently so that none of your information is left on there. And most of the time people are, well, they're like, that's great because, you know, most of the time your customer, what are they going to do? They're either going to sell that thing in a garage sale or they're going to throw it away or, you know, or whatever. And, you know, that information, obviously, we know is still on there, even if it has been singly wiped out. You know, you actually have to go through and do more passes on it to make sure that the whole thing is covered. But
sure, absolutely. Also, no, cool. I had a woman that I was doing some work for, and I mentioned something about, you know, if she had an old machine and we were talking about whether it's worth upgrading, and she said no, she just wanted to get rid of it. And I said, if you just want to get rid of it, I'd be happy to take it because there's a great place here in Columbus where they can recycle the equipment. And so that was a whole situation where I educated her of there are a lot of toxic things in the computers that, you know, are bad for the environment. You don't want it to just end up in the landfill.
Right.
So if, you know, look in your, you know, local Google searches for whatever facilities and resources that you have available near you. There's a great one here, and they just weigh it and they give you a check. I think I took in like four or five computers and they paid me like $18. So it covered gas, but it was, you know, knowing that you're doing the right thing was really good. I pulled the hard drives beforehand, so I was able to wipe those and take care of those. And the rest of the equipment was taken care of, you know, in an appropriate fashion.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I noticed one of your other blog articles says, you know, and we've talked about this a lot, I think, on these different shows, scammers claiming to be Microsoft. And I cannot believe how many of those things are actually being still used today, and they're actually effective.
Yep.
People are paying money in you know, for these services. Then I'm having to write letters to their credit card companies saying, no, this is an illegitimate company they were taking advantage of, and you need to, you know, refund them the money on their Visa or MasterCard. And that's crazy.
Sure. Well, it used to be, you know, Nigerian scammers, you know, wanting you to help them transfer some money. But there have been a lot of articles published, and Technibble is a great resource for that as well.
Absolutely.
And there was a whole discussion where I don't remember who it was, but they were saying that, you know, once the machine had been, you know, secured and it wanted that boot up, that password, typically it's something like 1234 or something like 123. It was something like that, where luckily the person had disconnected, but they didn't give them the credit card information, but the system was locked. And they were, you know, they were kind of halfway hosed, not all the way. And they were able to just type in, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I don't know if that's, you know, the secret password all the time or just in this one instance.
Okay.
But there was a great discussion on that on the forum.
Well, that's a good little tip right there because, yeah, you might try something like that if a customer does come up with that. Because obviously these people are, even though they're making money, you know, scamming you, they probably have pretty simple processes, I would say, to, you know, to be able to remember.
They're probably following a script on their end.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not going to come up with a complex password that you may forget, you know, even within a few minute period. So that's good. So, and I was noticing, so you're doing, you know, with the remote support, you also have remote management and monitoring. How's that going for you? And what are you using to do that?
You know, I've tried to dabble a little bit. I know GFI Max is very popular and people love that. That was kind of the third one that I looked at. One of the first ones that I looked at is called Soluto, S-O-L-U-T-O.
Okay.
And I think it's all right. It's met my needs, you know, price-wise, it's kind of in the same ballpark as the other products. I don't necessarily think it's as robust in terms of the scripting and the kind of things that it can do. I think that where it really succeeds is it provides feedback to the users. They see it in the system tray. They get a little notification when I updated Windows with security fixes or Adobe Flash, you know, had an update and I took care of it for them. It lets them know that I'm there and that I'm helping. Also, anytime there's a blue screen or an application crash, it will send me a message, which is great. So I know that something is going on my customer's machine. Also, I can see and manage toolbars. So if there are suddenly some new toolbars or some new search engines that are selected as the default, then I can see that and attempt to correct that on my end, you know, from my web-based administrative console. So right. I can be anywhere, and as long as their machine comes online, I can try to remedy those items. I can eliminate applications from the boot up sequence. And, you know, when those are successful, then they get a little pop-up notification. And it's a very nice kind of cartoony graphic where there's kind of like angel wings on it. And they kind of get a good, happy feeling inside. So I it's not as robust, I think, scripting-wise as some of the other products. But it's great. It's, you know, price-wise, it's pretty comparable. And for the things that I'm using it for now, it's definitely meeting my needs.
And what was the name of the product again?
It's called Soluto, Soluto.com.
Soluto. Okay. All right. I will definitely check that out. Very interesting. Okay. So, and yeah, that's so, how's that been working out for you as far as, you know, are people buying into those systems? Are you able to sell them or, you know, are, cause a lot of times these things go back to, it's the same thing with, you know, backups. Nobody wants to do backups so, until it's too late. But like I said, in the beginning of the show, I think people are becoming more and more infected quicker and not necessarily with viruses per se, but with malware, and it's slowing their machines down and they deal with this heartache. And it seems like these systems are the ones to, you know, stop them from having to deal with that heartache on a day-to-day basis and just be able to use their computer.
You know, some of this product can take care of those kind of issues and some of it can't. And that's kind of my struggling point in terms of, do I want to stick with this? Do I want to move on to something else that might be a little bit more robust and give me more granularity onto my users' machines? I think that for my users, having a decent antivirus product, running something like CCleaner, or even running something preventive-wise like Malwarebytes anti-malware, you know, the pro version would eliminate a tremendous amount.
Yes,
and that's something where I was able to purchase some licenses, and I'm reselling those to customers. And you know, it's a trade-off because you know I don't want to bite myself, you know, in the butt of selling them something that then they never need me again.
Right.
You know, but it's something that, and I've had users that have this product and they still get infected. And
yes,
you know, unfortunately nothing is perfect, and also nothing can prevent, again, you know, on a system basis, of a user clicking yes.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
You can never defend against that. And, you know, whether it's whatever it is, you know, it was something that, you know, once they clicked yes, and there was a whole host of things that were installed, and it was kind of a bit of a nightmare. But by the same token, they were running the MBAM, you know, 174 or 175. So they had an older version, and I don't think it had been updated. So, yes, you know, they were doing the right thing, but they were kind of outdated and weren't keeping it up to date, and they weren't being proactive, you know, and there may have been some corruption there of the files and, you know, the way that it was working. But, you know, I see that a tremendous amount could be prevented with just a few tools and some, you know, safe computing practices.
Right. And it's hard. I've talked with this with Kerry Holzman about this, and we had a show where we basically talked about how can you educate your customer. And we've come to the conclusion that it's very, very hard to be able to do that.
Sure, absolutely. I saw a great newsletter that one of the fellow techs was sending out to her users, her customers. And she had a screen cap, and I don't remember what page it was on, you know, from download.com, or I don't know where it was. I take that back. I don't know where it was from. I don't want to give them a bad name. But it was, the person was trying to download, I don't know, Adobe Flash, let's say, something like that.
Right.
And there were so many ads and fake download links on the page. She used it as an example of kind of in a quiz format of, okay, here are four places on the web page. Which is the correct one to download? And, you know, it was very difficult.
It is.
For us educated techs, but imagine if an end user was going to try to download, you know, some sort of, you know, cleanup tool, an ADW cleaner or, you know, Hitman Pro or whatnot. You know, how do you know which link is real? You know, and that's hard. These are, you know, the customers that I'm working with and I'm helping are the kind of people who type in, you know, let's pick a website. Let's pick NBC News. So they're going to Google and they're typing in the search box, NBCnews.com. And they don't know that you can actually just type that in the address bar.
Yeah, right. Or, nobody knows that, apparently.
Right. And, you know, kind of, I start twitching when that happens.
Right.
You know, it's right there. It would save you a search. Or they're searching for something and they click on that first link, which is the ads up at the top. And I say, hold on. Look at what you just clicked. You see up there where it says ad or a sponsored advertisement or something like
right.
that. And look at the URL in what's that?
Yeah.
It's the web address, you know, URL. You know, look at the web address that you're going to, you know, some, you know, the product that you're looking for, you know, Adobe or whatnot, is there, but there's a whole lot of stuff after that. And, you know, it's .cn or it's ., you know, .ru or it's ., you know, whatever country. That's not, you know, the official site. You need to, you know, scroll down and really look and not just blindly click, because you're going to get yourself into trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard, you know, even if you teach them, it's hard for them to see. And I, to be honest with you, even when I'm manually downloading Adobe Flash, I have to sit there and look at the four websites that come up in my search and go, okay, yep, that's the one I want. You know, because it's tough, you know, so
absolutely.
If I'm having a hard time as a technician and I do this stuff all the time, I can't imagine what the regular consumer goes through. And that's part of why I started, you know, giving managed services. I'm like, hey, this is going to stop you from having to worry about all that stuff. All the stuff will be done in the background when you're, you know, you won't even know what's happening. It's going to happen. Boom. It'll take care of itself. And then you won't have to worry about it. You can just get on your computer, pay your bills, go to the bank, whatever you want to do, search your websites, watch your YouTube videos, and your computer will just work. And that's what I'm selling the system as. So
and because there are so many attack vectors in, you know, Java vulnerabilities, Adobe vulnerabilities, those are the things that pop up down in the system tray and the user doesn't know what to do.
Yes.
You know, if they even have all the notifications present there. You know, most of the time I just see the little arrow and they're, you know, ignoring that. And they also have, you know, a Norton expiration notice, so they have no antivirus, or they have Windows updates that they haven't applied in 6 months. So, you know, those are, you know, critical areas that, you know, through RMM we can take care of.
Right. Yeah, you know, back in the day, that reminds me, back when I was working on XP machines, I would always unhide the notification check mark so that all their icons would show, because back then I had gotten it down to you might see three icons maybe, and then if you add, as you were adding stuff on, that would become bigger and bigger until you had the 15 or 20 of when I first started the system up. And I haven't been doing that, but that's probably in partially, I think, because there are some legitimate icons that are running, and it's more like, you know, 7 to 10 anymore, and it's not 2 or 3. So
sure. Well, there's always, you know, Dell backup, or there's right. Intel and processor and audio controls and whatnot. But a great way, if you're not going to, you know, use a remote managed service, is, and I think you were talking about this on one of the previous podcasts, was patch my PC. That's a great way to, you know, and I won't rehash all of that, but that's a great way to, you know, kind of scan for all of those common applications and update them in one fell swoop.
And, you know, it's funny. I have that in my, I use D7.2 for my virus removals and stuff. And I have that in my toolbox. It's in D7.2. And I've never used it because to be honest with you, even as a technician, as long as I've been doing this stuff, I really had never heard of that program or even knew it was available.
And, it's great.
Yeah, I think Jorge was telling me that that's what he uses for his machines when he's redoing them. I'm like, I'm going to definitely check into that, you know, because that saves you a lot of time.
Sure. You get, you know, a good C cleaner running, you get ADW cleaner running, you get Patch My PC running. You can get such efficiencies and, you know, do some very thorough scanning, updating, and, you know, turn your clients over and get them out the door faster so they're happier and you can move on to the next client. So, you know, those are, you know, some great programs to leverage and to use. Absolutely.
They are very cool. So right now, let's go into, what are some of your business tips that work for you? I know we've kind of talked about your scheduling with your calendar and stuff like that. Is there anything else that you can think of that would be a good business tip for people out there?
I would definitely say along the lines of, and this is kind of what Jorge has been talking about, and you were talking about the last couple of weeks, is get yourself legal and use something like FreshBooks or QuickBooks or some sort of accounting software so that you can properly collect and pay your sales tax. You don't want to get hit, and have that problem. As a business, if you're purchasing something to resell to a customer, you can give the vendor your EIN or other tax status certificate so that you can get a tax exempt. And then when you sell it to the customer, you charge sales tax and you pass that on to the state or whatever municipality that you're in. So definitely it would be my suggestion to, you know, have some proper accounting software. What I do, and it has worked well for me, and this is kind of on the business side and on the customer service side, is when I'm on site and I'm working with somebody, I'm taking notes the whole time of what I'm doing, and you know that's part of the invoice. So they see the dollar amount at the bottom, but in the middle is all the steps that I did. And when I was starting out, I would try to connect to their printer. I would connect my laptop to their printer, and I would try to print. And I realized I am wasting so much time downloading all of these HP drivers for printers that I'm never going to see again.
Right.
And Windows 7 is much, much better than XP was. But I realized, why am I doing this? Their computer is already hooked up to their printer.
Right.
So I print my notes from QuickBooks as a PDF, throw it on my flash drive, connect it to their machine, and they print their own receipt. And that's nice. That's their invoice. They can see all of the billing information. They can see the steps that I did. If I ever need to go back and refer to it, I have that on my system, but they have my name, my contact information. Hopefully they're going to keep that. And if not, that's fine. You know, they can always get in touch with me and we can have that short conversation on the phone or through email of, you know, whatever information they forgot, or we can set up a new appointment if necessary. But, you know, that's a great efficiency of getting when I'm on site with a user, with a customer, and I'm taking notes, they know that they're getting that value of, oh, he did a lot. I may not understand all the things that he did, or, oh, yes, this is the whole conversation that we had about why I need to upgrade, or, you know, different choices that I may have for backup solutions, or, yes, my system is slow and we talked about adding some RAM to it. You know, that's a situation where I can add those notes to the invoice, and they can hopefully refer back to it and stick it in their computer file or their file of, you know, computer questions to ask Rob later, you know, those kinds of things. So those would be my tips of, you know, get yourself a good accounting software, pay your sales tax, and, you know, make sure that you have an efficient way to deliver that information as necessary to your customers.
Those are great tips. Yeah, a lot of insight there. And when I started my business and started charging, that's one of the first things that I did. And, you know, basically went and started my LLC and just went on from there. Of course, I'm still trying to get to the point where I want to use an accounting software, but I know that you have to pay for them. And the way I'm still doing it today is I'm still using an Excel spreadsheet where I manually add everything in. And at the end of the year, I got to add everything up and give it to my tax guy so that he can, you know, properly do my taxes for me. And one of those things I'm going to look into is, you know, maybe doing a QuickBooks Online or something like that and, you know, see how easy that's going to be to use. Because I had looked at – now, are you using the regular QuickBooks?
Yes, I am. I looked at the online version or a few years ago. It was called, like, you know, Web Start or Web Edition, something like that. Okay. But I'm not always going to be online.
Right.
And I think that FreshBooks kind of has that angle as well. I'm not running a tablet. I'm not running, you know, a data plan on a mobile system. So it's just me sitting there working on my laptop next to their machine. And their problem may be that their internet went out,
right,
or their wireless, you know, got messed up, or, you know, their hardware is failing or whatnot. So I need to be able to print and work offline.
Okay.
And I've purchased QuickBooks. I don't purchase it every year, you know, every, you know, 3-4 whatever years as necessary. And it's worked for me. It's a great way not only for me to keep track of the sales tax, but also, as I mentioned, you can create different services and you can set up your coding so that you know this is a repeat customer, or
right,
this is a customer that's taking advantage of a coupon that I, you know, offered 6 months ago, or this is a brand new customer and they came from a Yellow Pages ad or a, you know, Google AdWords or something like that. I always make sure to ask my customers, how did you hear about me, to find out whether it's Angie's List,
right,
or customer referral, or, you know, just saw my website, whatnot. And so you can use that classification and then you can pull up your reports. And that's how I know 65% of my business comes from repeat customers. That's how I know, oh, at the end of this billing period, I owe this much sales tax to the state of Ohio. You know, it makes all of that back end administration so much easier. And you can analyze your data and be a better business.
That's great. Now, did you find QuickBooks, you know, fairly easy to set up for the way that you're using it?
You know, I stumbled a little bit at the beginning. I think it took me a few weeks. I had a homegrown Access database with some Masterform subform that I was using at the very beginning. I struggled with the sales tax as part of that.
Okay.
You know, and this is like 10 years ago.
Right.
And once I got into QuickBooks and I realized, oh, this is how I set up a service. This is how I purchase a product and pay for it, and then I resell that product to my customer. And QuickBooks knows you can't sell this product to your customer. You don't have any in inventory. Like, oh, I have to go purchase it first. You know, and QuickBooks knows that. You know, depending on your bank, you may be able to download your, you know, your business account checking statement, so you can do your reconciliation that way. But I think it's definitely worth it. And if it's not QuickBooks, I know that there are a lot of other products out there, you know, something. Because if you're not taking care of that, who is?
Right.
You know, your job is to not only run the business, but perform the business for your customers. And if you can only focus on one, then you're going to suffer.
Exactly.
You know, and as a one-man shop who's mobile, I'm doing it all. I'm doing all the marketing. I'm doing all the accounting. I'm doing all the on-site work with customers. So to have something like QuickBooks is great for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you're the guy that's wearing 10 different hats to make the business run.
Absolutely. Well,
I'll tell you what, Rob, these are great tips that you've given us today. Just a lot of information, a lot of good information that I think technicians can use and further along their business. And I'm sure they've gotten some tips and stuff out of there. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Is there any way that if people wanted to reach out to you, maybe send you an email or something like that, ask you a question about what you're doing in your business, what would be the best way to do that?
Sure, absolutely. Oh, well, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure to be on. I just started listening to the podcast recently, and I think it's a great resource for everybody out there. The best way to get in touch with me is probably through the contact form on my website, which is sohotechcolumbus.com. You'll probably have links to it or whatnot in the show notes.
Yeah.
Contact form there, or you know, that's probably the best way. And you know, you can see some of the blog information, and you can see the calendar in action. And you know, if those work for you, give them a shot. I think there's, you know, either a 14 or a 30-day demo if people are interested in that.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll have those links to the show in the show notes. Well, I just want to let you guys know you can find me on Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallisch or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys also can help support the Podnuts Network the next time you're shopping at Amazon. Go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. Each show will give you some good apps to try on your phone or tablet. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in learning how to do remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. If you want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech, listen to the Geeksters. If you want to learn about Linux so that even you can understand, then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server-related, at work or for fun, check out The Server Show. In a market for a new phone? Check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information about your mobile technology. Take your health to the next level and check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.